and that's not really your problem at all. We apologize for that.
Program 2 is on now.
This is an important program. It's new to us.
It has broadband infrastructure and so on. So I think we should allocate of the hour, you know, at least 45, 50 minutes. Will that be okay, James?
Okay. And then legal governance and transactions, we could reduce a bit because we've had you before and so on. So if we could chop off about 15 minutes. But let's see how far we go. We're not finishing the carryover tomorrow. Next quick thing is that we, in fact, are meeting tomorrow at 9:30. So that, you know, those of you taking flights back, including some members, mind you, we finish a bit earlier. I would also like to say that we might hold over some issues from the autumn school. We'll find some space there. And some things can be done in exchange between Eric Boscardi and Des Maureen on our side and your department, Portia. I think we are more, let's say, collective now in our approach. And we've allocated people various responsibilities, and we are now more cohesive. I don't think the Mail and Guardian is going to write an article about the abrasive behavior of the chairperson. Or the whip being abrasive as well. But she and I are old friends, and we, fortunately for us, can fight. You have yet to hear us speak to each other outside these meetings. But the members are aware of that. So, I'm slightly concerned about members from your department having prepared and then feeling that, you know, they come here. I know Catherine gets upset. We're chopping off the time and so on. So just take it as part of a process. And this is not going to happen again. I think we've agreed more or less, and that's right, that we won't have the budget report the first week of the second quarter. It'll have to be the second week of the second quarter. Okay. Because, I mean, we're not... Sorry? Yeah, well, no, we can review that. That's not a problem. We can do that tomorrow. Okay. Having said that, let's hand over. So we're going to finish on 4:15. Let's move to James. Any comments, any questions about the approach?
No.
We'll leave it on that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, just to continue from where I think both the Program 1 and the DG have left off, and also maybe pick up on one of the issues that was raised around exactly what are we doing as a department. I think we did go through that slide around mission and vision, which really captures what we are as an oversight department on state-owned enterprises. And we when we say we, you know, we make sure that we align what they are doing with what government wants to do, we really mean that. And our unit, it used to be called Analysis and Risk Management before, and essentially, it was making sure that the SOEs, what they are doing there in the industry, in the economy, does contribute to government objectives, which were I think outlined earlier in the presentation. Now, before last year, if you recall, because I think there was a reference made to the last year report from the Portfolio Committee, when we were working on analysis and risk management, we identified a number of issues that we said would be key deliverables from our unit. One of them, I think, related to, you know, setting up benchmarks and KPIs in our SOEs, corporate plans, and make sure that they are aligned to what we want to achieve as government. And that's what really we have been focusing on, making sure that as we close the shoulder compacts and we appoint board members and all that, that they are tied to specific KPIs and we benchmark those KPIs so that we can compare whether these SOEs are indeed up to standard or comparatively speaking, are they efficient as they should be? Because we believe that if SOEs are efficient in terms of operationally, financially, but also on socio-economic issues, in that way, that's how we contribute actually to this economy. I will talk on this program, I will talk about essentially ESCOM, Alexco, and Infraco. Obviously, Infraco is already advanced because of the deal. I think there will be more discussions also later on in Infraco. But also our governance unit will have more information on the latest legislative process. I'm going to start with ESCOM, Chair. As you know, our as a unit, we are responsible for ESCOM, for monitoring the performance of ESCOM. That includes analyzing the corporate plan. Like now, they've just submitted a 3-year corporate plan in terms of the PFMA, which they needed more time to finalize because of a number of issues relating to ESCOM around investment program and issues of energy mix that they need to bring into the fore and make sure that the issues of security of supply are addressed sufficiently, and that the balance sheet would be geared to ensuring that they can deliver on the challenges that we are facing in the energy sector. Now, we are currently working on their corporate plan, and we will be finalizing it very soon so that we can identify issues that we need the board to focus on in the next 3 years. We are also getting, normally we get quarterly reports, we get annual reports from ESCOM, and we advise in the department as to what are the issues that need to be taken up with the board or management by the DG and the minister. We are having a dashboard that earlier it was mentioned that we are trying to make sure that all SOEs are now captured in this dashboard, and it's not only focusing on investment programs, but it goes to governance issues, financial issues, socio-economic issues, and everything, so that through a dashboard, you are able to see the performance of our SOEs. That's what we are working on. The other issue which flows from the study that was done and commissioned by the department on the security of supply relates to the reserve margin, which you would recall is one of the big issues in the country around the supply problem that we have as to exactly, precisely, where is our reserve margin and who is guiding and who has to dictate as to exactly what reserve margin should ESCOM be focusing on. Because you have a problem with the two planning processes in the country. You have the regulator with their own national resource plan. You have ESCOM on the other side using their own internal planning process, the ICEF document, and the challenge is to make sure that at the end of the day you have one single planning process, especially because you will very soon have private sector participation. So they need an official document that they can refer to. Now, with regards to the reserve margin, ESCOM uses its own, we have different definitions. You know, it's not clear whether you include operational or planning reserve margin, or you include DSM, or you include core generation. There are a number of scenarios. So every time you ask exactly where is your reserve margin, you get different answers. And precisely because there is a need for a policy guidance, essentially, as to what should be a definition of a reserve margin, it is said that internationally, 15% is regarded as the best practice, but it depends on different countries' conditions. In other countries, it's more than that. So you have to be guided by official and policy position as to what should be the reserve margin given the security of supply in a particular country. Now, what we are doing is we have submitted some of those recommendations to DMB, and we're having discussions with them. They have agreed that they will come back to us. We have an interdepartmental task team, and also the principal's forum of DGs, who will be processing some of these recommendations for ministers, so that we finalize the issue of reserve margin as to exactly what ASCOM should be focusing on. And also the regulator should then need to monitor on a regular basis. We are working with the DME on the IPP process. You would know that ESCOM currently is participating as an off-taker, so they would enter into a power purchase agreement with whoever is going to build. And that's what our involvement is really related to. The challenge there has been that this process, we would have preferred that it's centrally run. Like in other countries, you do have a model like that where an entity that's going to be an off-taker would be the one that is responsible for actually issuing a tender and inviting people who wish to build and generate electricity, and they take hold of the whole process of negotiating the PPA, but also making sure that they hold the IPP to a particular timeline. But the challenge that we have been having now is that you have a cabinet decision that says a policy department should be the one that issues a tender, invite bidders, go through the evaluation process, and then go to ESCOM and say, now we have elected somebody, now you have to get into a PPA agreement. So there have been challenges, but we're having discussions with the DME, and there is some, I think, consensus that we have to move away from that in future and have some agreement at the bilateral level, maybe even go to cabinet, to ensure that in the next phase we do consider a situation where ESCOM actually gets to be the one that issues tender, and it's monitored around the policy of government on the 70-day split. On the EDI, you would recall that after going up and down on whether we need the 7th rate or only 6, cabinet finally took a decision that we will go through the 6 wall-to-wall model, and we will ensure that these entities are public entities, and they will be regulated in terms of the NEXA and PFMA processes. Now, for us, what has been happening is we have been engaging with DME on the bill that is coming out. They are drafting a bill, and the plan is to take that to cabinet very soon. We are engaging. We have raised a number of issues that are critical, not just for ESCOM, but I think for the country as a whole. There are issues relating to what will be the role in the cabinet decision. For example, it talks about ESCOM playing a transitional role in the REDS model. Now, you have to define that transitional participation. You have to say, what does it mean on the ESCOM assets, distribution assets? Are they going to be compensated? Is ESCOM going to play a shareholder role as well? So there are a number of these issues that we are going through with DME. It includes the National Treasury and DPLG, because they all have, I think, impact on each other. The other area that is of concern in the whole process will relate to the big customer that ESCOM is having under this KISEX department. This is the retail function, which is dedicated to specific big customers like Sasol, Alken, and all that. Now, our concern is not that we are challenging...
Sorry, James, what does that acronym mean?
No, the T-Sex. It's a key... What?
K-S-A-C.
Yeah, but the key, K-S-A-C. I'm not sure.
Key strategic.
Yeah.
Yes. Strategic is the word. That must be there. I'm sure.
Something customer. I don't remember.
It doesn't matter. Okay, but fine.
Okay.
Short customers.
Yes, I mean, these are your Alken, BHP, Billy.
I like that.
That's
they have to have power.
Yes, yes, yes. Now.
That's a good one.
Now, we have raised this issue of, because when we look at the draft bill from DME, it did have a particular definition on retailing and distribution generally, which also flows from the Electricity Regulation Act that was passed, which had a particular definition of distribution. And when you go to the Constitution, there's another definition around the electricity reticulation, which brings up the issues around the powers of municipalities to administer and run distribution in their areas. So those are the issues that are confronting us. There are constitutional issues, but also, as I say, we have to deal with the issues of, in the economy, do you throw these key customers in the rates model without making sure that prior to that, the rates model has stabilized and that it has some credibility for these customers to start moving maybe at some point in the rates section. Or we should say, you know, given the credibility, the history, and the experience of Eskom, they should stay with them. Those are the issues that we are dealing with, because it also has an impact on Eskom as well around, it's about 40% of their revenue. It could have an impact on their credit rating, for example, if suddenly they lose such a revenue base or customer base in the company, and it could be viewed otherwise by other investors who are holding Eskom bonds, or some loan covenants that Eskom may have, and because that would be a significant change in the asset base and the customer base. I did talk about the Electricity Regulation Act, which essentially it relates to how they define reticulation, which has an impact on Eskom and its distribution assets. The new build program is continuing. I think the DG mentioned earlier that it has been revised, 150 billion now. We are interrogating some of the elements of this program, and we are working on a cap memo to take it to cabinet so that we ensure that cabinet and all government departments as a whole are able to ensure that this program succeeds, because if Eskom plans such a big program and they then face problems with environmental affairs, with servitude, and all these things, as a country, we won't make it. So it's very critical that at the government level there is recognition of the importance of the program and all the constraints in the successful implementation of the program. On Alexco, we are still celebrating even now the signing of the deed of settlement on Alexco. To us, it's a breakthrough. You would recall that last year we transferred an amount of 80 million to the community, to Alexco company, essentially to cover the working capital needs of Alexco. They couldn't pay wages, salaries. They couldn't pay suppliers. But also, we needed to set money aside for both limited amount of exploration, but also make sure that on the township development we proceed, whether there's an agreement or not in the state. We have committed ourselves as a state that we will proceed with the establishment of the township. So a lot of work has been done on that. The only thing is, I think now that the deal has been signed, we just need to make sure that we implement it and the community is brought on board. And I think all the elements, especially that relate to transferring money around, compensation, recapitalization, that's the work that will be occupying us in the next few months. ALESCO, as I think currently, because the implementation of the deal effectively start August or so. So between now and that time, we will need some injection of funding to ensure that the company stays afloat and that they don't have any serious problems around solvency, because there have been serious loss making in especially the ABT side, where the ABM have been essentially subsidizing the ABT, but also the ABM has also seen some deterioration around the revenue that they're getting from the marine side, but also the costs of land mining have gone up significantly. So there is a need to ensure that we continue to restructure and refocus the business and make sure that we inject necessary funding to make sure that it stays afloat. On Infraco, I think there isn't much other than saying that we have made progress in discussions with the other relevant departments like DOC and Treasury. There are outstanding issues that we need to be sorted out, but safe to say, Cabinet has approved that the bill should go through the parliamentary process, and the bill will be, I think, the date will be set. But in the meantime, I think we have made progress through the ESCOM subsidiary, where we had to move assets into this subsidiary so that once the Infraco is established, they can continue with commissioning, and the Neotel and Infraco are not held back by this process. I think this is really the budget. It includes the Infraco amount and the ALESCO amount. Yeah, I'll stop there, Chair.
All right. You took a lot of time. I somehow have the feeling that Infraco will be dealt with a greater length, but I realize now. We're going to look at it next week anyway. All right. Just to point out to members that unfortunately, if you look at last year's budget report, Program 2 was analysis and risk management. So, and we didn't say very much about that either. Now, analysis and risk management is probably in Program 3 now, is that correct? The new Program 3.
The roles, it happens right across the board.
But now it's a generic thing.
Because they were doing financial analysis and risk, like each enterprise.
Okay, then the question you might help us with, DG Comrades, if you look at page 9 of our budget, it's just an idea of what really got done in risk management. In 5.5, you said the outputs for the financial year would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 things. A brief, obviously an annual report, even a deadline there, you see, November 2006, where will you report on that?
Okay. Chair, I think on the, if I can say something, Sandra will cover, I think, progress made on risk management, because we aligned risk management with the shareholding management model.
That's what I was saying. In the
way so we'll get the report.
Okay.
And I think on other issues, there are two things. One is some work has been done around the KPIs, the benchmarks, the quarterly reports, the financial analysis manual. What we still need to do in specific SOEs is to make sure that we still, and also as part of risk management, that we still continue to interrogate the contingent liabilities that are in some of the SOEs, medical aid and pension funds. That's what we need to uncover as well as part of risk management.
Okay, I hand over to members. I'm just clarifying that issue. What do we want to read in respect of these sub-programs in the program and the budget?
as well. Yeah.
Okay.
You're not going to say you don't have a mandate, no? Because we have colleagues with it. Yeah.
I'll turn down to you to ask questions.
Yeah, yeah.
You're dealing with program two, is that right? You have a mandate. I don't know what it is, but you have one.
Okay, Chair, I'd just like
to... Okay, Conlo, I know you're irritated at me. I won't say anything.
I should first look at the vote itself. Under program two, again, in computer services, in this program there's none. Well, in the other programs there's some computer services. I know that in program one it was the dashboard.
You're asking a question apart from computer services.
That's the one I know. And then the consultancy.
I'm just teasing you. Sorry.
Yeah, and in consultancy, in this one, it's about 23% of the spending. So I'm assuming these are professional consultancies, which should be different from program one, which is admin. Even though I thought admin should be more internal rather than outsourcing. So that's on the budget itself. And then on page 24 of your presentation, ESCOM's got this new, it's a continuing new building program, but I'm just wondering, with all the problems now that ESCOM has, especially with the old equipment going out there, giving problems, and they have to spend more effort and resources repairing them, do we have the capacity to have this on target? And also, is that going to affect our the department's targets for ESCOM in terms of various performance and or the KPIs that the department has set out? Especially, I heard was it yesterday or the day before, Eastgate was out of power for 24 hours. Although it's not ESCOM policy, not ESCOM's fault, but it's obviously impacted ESCOM as well. And then lastly, the DDG mentioned that on InfraCode there was not much to say, but I can't understand why, because I mean, for 637 million rand being transferred, she must have something to say in terms of, I know bulk of it goes into purchasing of the actual network, but so far the committee hasn't learned anything concrete about the stuff, like how long, how many total kilometers have we transferred from one enterprise to the other. And these are more detailed, but obviously also the DG mentioned last time, these are, some of them are confidential. And I don't see why the committee cannot call a closed meeting for these things to be reviewed before it's too late. That's my view of the thing. And also, on your page, you mentioned that the last time we saw the DG, DG said that the undersea cable study was confidential and there was no decision made. But on this presentation slide, it seems like the department has decided to go ahead with the undersea cable. So I'd just like to know what has changed, and can we, now that we decided to go ahead, are we going to make that public, the particular study? Thanks.
Should we take this lot? unless it's something overlapping directly, which is fine. Okay, read it anyway, doesn't it?
On the reserve margin policy on ESCOM, I hear James saying that they are in a process of engaging DME on issues that would form the basis of this kind of policy. And he also spoke of a single process which would be entailed in a single policy document, so that we do not go different ways in terms of managing the reserve margin policy process. I just wanted to check if there is anything in place already, and whether it would not be asking for too much if one could have a sense of the key elements of that kind of a reserve margin policy, in terms of, you know, just the overall framework, that these would be the elements But if it's too much of a of an expectation, then it's fine. Maybe down the line, as it is supposed to be due in July this year, the committee would have the opportunity to have a look at the margin policy itself, but also to check where is South Africa looking at the international 15% reserve margin standard, or lower than that, or what. At least by now we should be having as a country an idea. And then the second one, Chair, is on the EDI. I understand that there is a process in places also, and that they are engaging DME in trying to understand the role of ESCOM. But what I wanted to check is, would it be only DME paving the way in terms of what the role of ESCOM would be, or is DPE and ESCOM having some ideas also to share in terms of saying, we think this is the way to take when dealing with the matter? And then the last one, Chair, is on restructuring Alexco. I see that under the restructuring of the business, I might have missed out on it, but already by April, which is last month, there should have been a business model for Alexco. There should have been a funding plan in terms of the needs of Alexco. There should have been already an indication on the implication of the discontinuation of on-land mining. So I wanted to have a clue as to whether those things raised there, which we do in April already, according to the targets or milestones raised in the judgment, if they are in place, and if not, when does a DPE think these issues would be on the table?
Not there. I think we'll stop there. There's just one thing
though, I should add, because it overlaps to some extent what Commissioner said. You see, one of the things that's worrying us is in the distribution aspect. You see, somebody said to us, if you're generating all this new energy and then you're going to improve your transmission system. Now, unless we get distribution sorted out, we're going to be in a big crisis. Some experts said it to us, either Anton Eberhard or somebody like that, and it stunned me actually, because I hadn't thought that through. So maybe you want to comment on that as well.
Some of these issues are above me, the DG will end. I think on the
Side of you, the left hand side of you.
On the issue of the, I was also trying to check with the CFO on the computer services. I'm told that
this, why are you laughing? Look at him laughing, Chris.
He likes this computer.
He likes this. No, you don't have anything left hand. What? Haven't you worked out yet, Chris?
Because I'll tell you after the meeting. How it works, that it's obviously a centralized thing. The IT department must make sure that there is alignment in the department. Now, I know for a fact that in our unit, really, we didn't have most people joining us. We're not envisaging to get new people. So most people have already been on board, and the computers have been really bored and everything. So that's why you see in the next 2 or 3 years, we don't have like a budget for it, but it would be somewhere in the central budget if there's a need to buy or procure any computers. And then the issue of you know, ESCOM investment program and the possibility of missing some deadlines, it is a risk that we have to all manage and make sure that there are mitigation. ESCOM, we are monitoring their plan, their risk management plans on this, because they have raised issues around the skills, the issues around the approval processes of the environmental, also in some cases they must apply for servitude. So these things take long times. There are issues around mining licenses for some of the mining companies who must make sure that they have coal for Eskom. So there are a number of issues that we have to check and manage on a regular basis to make sure that we don't meet some of the deadlines. For example, the more our focus has been on the next 5 years, essentially, and even now, the winter that is coming. So we ask them key pointed questions around the return to service. When are you commercially operational? Which unit, you know, would be commercially operational on the return to service plant? The OCGTs, how far are we, you know, is gas secured? So those would be our immediate things that we focus on to make sure that we check even through the dashboards. We can even see where are the issues that they are facing. There are instances where it requires that we have to interact with other departments. So, especially, for example, you take Project Alpha, where there were issues around the environmental approvals, and they were taking too long and all those things. So we are worried about those things, and we get reports as well, but we do take it up in the government system as well. The on Infraco, I mean, you are absolutely correct. The majority of the transfer on 627 was mostly about the acquisition of assets, but also when we started, remember we essentially asked for a loan from Eskom so that the commissioning can start in the meantime. So part of the money was there to make sure that the work continues and the network is revitalized and make sure that it will be ready once Infraco is established. So that's the 627, but going forward, there will still be a need to put some more money, because if you recall, we have other investors in Infraco, and the plan, in the business plan, has been that there will be some money raised in the debt market, and some money will come from the investors, the equity shareholders. So, I mean, the DD will deal with the information, but I think last time we did present the network, the size of the network. We did show Transnet network and Eskom network separately, and I think it's not like the secret information. We can provide that information. But I think the DG can maybe update you on the sea cable. Now, the issue of the reserve margin, yes, we have agreed with DMV that we need to move faster, because it creates confusion for planning and also for Eskom to be able to say this is what we are complying with. So if you don't have a clear policy document or guideline, it leaves much to interpretation. Eskom can have 5% operational reserve margin and they say it's fine with us. They can have 8 to 10% planning reserve margin and they say it's fine with us. But until you say no, you must have 12%, and if it is below that, there are consequences. And you only need the regulator and the policy department to lead us on that. But we have agreed with DMV. They have agreed to come back to us with definition of the planning reserve margin and the operational reserve margin. Because that's useful for us and for Eskom, essentially. But we are going further. We are having discussions with Eskom around even, you know, getting information that can be published on a regular basis to the, you know, to the public, to say where is the reserve margin this month.
Yeah.
And I think there is that interaction with ESCOM that they should be able to do that. But those are the things that we'll be, you know, taking up with DMV as well to say, you know, there are a number of things that need to be done around the reserve margin, the publication, the definition issues and all that. They're all from the study that was done at that time. On the EDI, we are very clear on how do we protect the interest of our SOE. But I think it's more than that. It's also, you know, how we see this as affecting the whole economy, the whole country. I mean, as it was said earlier, if you don't have the distribution industry sorted out, you will perpetually have a problem of blackouts and everything, even if you fix the ESCOM part. So that is a challenge. So our discussions with DME is to make sure that in this coming legislation, we are able to provide clarity on things like, you know, compensation, shareholding in the RES model, the criteria for ESCOM to be there and for ESCOM to exit, issues around TSEs, where will they be located vis-a-vis municipalities and the constitution, and also the issues of, you know, compensation of assets. If you are asking ESCOM to go into this RES and then 5 years down the line you say they must exit, what's going to happen to the asset base? Because you need to have some sense up front. You can't wait until 5 years down the line. So those are the issues we have to raise with them very pointedly. Otherwise, we'll be really abdicating our responsibility as a shareholder, but also as a key stakeholder in this EDI process. The ALESCO program, really, you would recall that the negotiations took longer than we thought, and at some point we figured it not here. But at some point we thought there will never be an agreement because the lawyers were really, you know, running the show and were having a problem that the company is bleeding and the fiscal has to pump in money, and it's very difficult to explain to taxpayers that, you know, we're pumping money into ALESCO for salaries, for suppliers and everything, and there's nothing happening. So that has been a challenge. And fortunately, you know, someone prevailed in the community and they came back and they said we can sign now. So I think this plan here was assuming that we are not going to have any signing with the community. Therefore, we need to move on closing down the loss-making activities because we couldn't take it anymore. It was having a serious burden on the ALESCO financial statements, and that we needed to then focus on the marine side. And that's what we mean by coming up with a model for ALESCO. To say ALESCO focus on marine side, and maybe that's what we should do when we recapitalize ALESCO. But close down, retrench, and let's stop wasting money on the land mining side, because in any way the community will take it. But I think things have changed now, and we are back to the MOU and the deed of settlement to ensure that we implement from our side.
Dave, I tell you, I'd love to say what's going on here, but this is a public forum. This parliament, I tell you, I can write a book, actually, the other parliament. And the absurdity. You know, the word is surrealistic, James. I can't find another word. But I'm on this parliament. You know, I won't say very much, except, you know, I listened to the study group members at quarter to one. Everybody sounded so convincing, right? Then I speak to the staff, and they sound so convincing. Speak to this guy over the phone who's, I know I could be there. You know, Gina, you think you got problems? So this guy is shocking and saying, I never got involved. They all sound correct. Everybody sounds positive. You know, I'm trying to work out somewhere between the chap that's stuck in Joburg, irritated at me, because there was a study group comrade irritated at me. And the staff, they don't show it, but I'm sure they're very irritated at me. Subway, you know, is the truth. But you need a judicial commission inquiry. But anyway, it's fine. I'm sorry to be rude. James, you know, I have the highest respect for you. And quite frankly, of all the people here, you are the oldest, aren't you? We know you're the longest.
Not the oldest.
No, I mean, you know, your associate, your associate is the longest. No, we have loyalties to people who are around for a long time. Okay. Any more questions, please?
Should I?
You want to pick up, sorry, and then we've got... But you want to follow up immediately on what James has just said. Sumisa and then Bonnie Coffey. Conlo? Now
no, okay. No? Okay. Yeah.
You can laugh, but I can't. Okay, I guess.
No, Jay, it's a follow-up on the questions I wanted to ask, not on the responses.
Okay, yeah.
No, Jay, I forgot to ask them progress on the services that were provided by Alexco in terms of them being moved to the municipality or local or provincial government. I forgot to check that.
Okay. Shall we take Bong and Kofi quickly and Eric Boscati? That's fine. Okay, Eric?
Thank you, Chaperson. My question relates to Infraco. We know for a fact
that's
that...
That's a new question. All right, follow that. Fine.
We know for a fact that government is... one of the government's objectives is for the department to work with the private sector. We read from the newspaper some time ago that one of the companies that are involved in Fraco is called Vitesse. You may correct me if I'm wrong. Which has something like 26 or 27%. I just wanted to know if the reports from the media actually are true. That is this the only company that is involved in Fraco, or there are more that are coming on board, or is it enough for the department to work only with one company? Thank you.
Let me just start on Infoco. I mean, I don't think we were unnecessarily confidential about the information. Two things we haven't done. We haven't gone out to the press because we've just chosen to go by a particular discipline, which we get cabinet approval, which is normal. And then from cabinet, we then go to parliament, and then we go and make it a general publication. Or we've tried to sort of like hold to that reportage. In establishing Infoco as a standalone state-owned enterprise, they obviously in SAA, which is in the existence and the rest of the night, we have to be clear about mandate, clear about assets that are underlying the employee. So our intention was, first of all, in the summer school, you'll get a lot more detail about Infoco, the organization around Infoco. Later on in the year, when it's established and when the act is passed and it's established, in the following year, it puts in a corporate plan like any regular state-owned enterprise and becomes subject to your oversight direction. You can ask whatever questions that you may have. So a lot more of the details on Infoco will come out tomorrow directly. To get to the point, as part of, and we've said this, and some of these were commercial negotiations, in establishing Infoco, we had to, amongst the things, was agree to a particular deal. One of the things that we've been very worried about was the international connectivity, and the idea of having VSNL as a potential partner in Infoco remains, and that was, is VSNL, which would have, I think, 56%. 26%. We haven't finalized on that because we're establishing first the enterprise on a 100% basis, and then we'll come back and do a separate transaction on the 26% that they would be having in the company. In as far as the reserve margin, what we looked at is in the UK, they it isn't written in law, it isn't written as a policy guideline or anything like that, that they would have a particular reserve margin, but their reserve margin runs between 20 and 25%. It's just as a standard, they've kept it around there. But every single 1% increase in reserve margin is extremely expensive for an economy. So the question was, in our case, if you arrived at 15%, 15% tends to be an average that's global as a safe reserve for growing economy. Is that at least for 15% you're in a safe environment. We looked at 20%, but it was very expensive to get that extra 5%. So remaining at 15% seems sensible. And given where we are right now, it's still a far stretch to get to 15% itself. On EDI restructuring, I mean, it's one of those things that's taken like nearly a lifetime. And I think we have to get to close on restructuring EDI. The one worry that we've had is that you're going to be spending 150 billion over 5 years and you're bringing in about 2,000 megawatts of electricity every year. But on the other side, you don't have anyone investing to ensure that you're able to reach both the private individuals as well as companies on the other side. So it absolutely is essential that we get to a point where you're able to have some sanity or some clarity on the distribution side. You see in the paper, today's paper as well, so that I also watch government from the papers, I generally don't believe what they write about government in the papers, because the truth is somewhere in between what's in the paper and what's not written, that NERSA was going to be issuing a report on the state of distribution assets, and I think 15 or so of the municipalities. Now that's important because they, I think it's 9X, the electricity regulation bill, it's a bill, but it's passed all of the stages, and it's just waiting for sign-off by the president. What that helps with is that all metros, all municipalities, would now be licensed by NERSA. What that gives NERSA the opportunity is that does the each individual municipality which says that it wants to be a provider, its own provider for electricity, does it meet those minimum standards? If not, then the licenses would be revoked. The question then would be who is the assigned, because NERSA then has the power to decide who is then the supplier of electricity. And I think that produces quite an interesting opportunity to roll out the REDS as a restructuring program of government going forward. So I think on the undersea cable, here's the thing that's always something that there's a lot of information that we would have access to, which is commercially sensitive information that you would never ever get in the private sector whatsoever. So the undersea demand study, I doubt that we would ever treat it as public information. It would stay fairly confidential because it's on those commercial bases that you then develop the funding model, the pricing model, and the rest of the like. This clear principle at the end of the day in establishing InfraCo is that when you have InfraCo in place, when you have an undersea cable in place, you should be able to have two things in South Africa: a copious amount of broadband available anywhere, everywhere. It must be ubiquitous in South Africa, firstly. And then also the pricing must start to reflect prices in countries in which we compete with. So that would be one. But, you know, as I say, with InfraCo coming in, it's going to have its own affiliate on its board. Ask whatever questions you'd like to ask, but there's some information which has to remain confidential to the company.
When are you likely to
have the CEO and board and so on? Is it later this year after the bill is passed?
As James was saying, what we decided to, because we had particular obligations under the agreement with NERSA or the SNO. So when we acquired the assets of the SFN, they were acquired by a subsidiary of Eskom, technically. So we've now, as a subsidiary of Eskom, we've got both a board and we've got a CEO. So actually, what we've also got an interim arrangement where, for all intents and purposes, InfraCo reports directly to us and not to Eskom. So I think it's one of those things that we could arrange if there was a timing in your schedule for a presentation by the CEO to look at, this is the infrastructure, here's the plan, here's the deadline that we have to do on there. So that's quite possible. And in fact, I think one of the people is going to be in the autumn school.
Can I just ask a practical?
Lisa, just come in. You're coming in directly on this. Lisa?
I wanted to add on the reserve machine.
Oh, okay. Just hang on that. Let's just finish
this issue of InfraCo. You wanted to say something?
Okay. So, correct me if I'm wrong or say if I'm out of order, but my view is InfraCo is statute by state funding. The study is done by public money. So, I don't see why Parliament shouldn't have access to the reports or the studies. It might be a confidential one, but we can call a closed meeting. But my view was, unless Minister can convince me otherwise, I think Parliament should have access to it, since it was done by public funding. Like Intelligence Committee, they get confidential studies which can only be circulated among their members, or they can only be read at near centers where they can't take them out of the centers, but at least the members get access to the information. But by the time all the studies being done, all the decisions being made, members being left out of the loop. So we're actually not part of the monitoring process where we can't make comments or can't make any suggestions if we think that a particular direction is wrong. So that's my view of the thing. Perhaps I'm wrong, but because I'm also new to Parliament for 2 years now, but I think that's how my view on
no, you don't have to be defensive. It's a reasonable question. Bonnie Cookie, related to that? Do you have a view on that as well, Bonnie Cookie? Just your own view on the question he's raising. Because you're more familiar with these issues than we are.
Not too deep.
But also you're a lawyer, so I mean, you might know the terrain.
Sure, I just want to get a clarity. With this undersea cable, when we were passing the ECA, Electronic Communication Act, there is an undersea cable which was owned by Telecom Party and other private companies, where we said we want to break that monopoly so that other companies can have access to them. They were promised to take action and other things, but nevertheless we passed that act that must be taken from Telecom. On the same time, recently the Minister of Communication has been saying, SADC, there is a NEPAD one now, under sea cable which is talked about. Which one we're talking about? You see, I just want to get that. You see, we've got this one of Telecom private companies and so on, we've got the current way 12, I'm sure now 7 or 8 countries out of 12 is fine. The net now is called NEPAD cable, whatever, the name has been changed. Then I just want to check that which one now are we talking about, the undersea cable? Exactly, so that I'll be, maybe there's a third one, I don't know. They seem to be expanding every day and so on. The other issue, Chair, which has been touched, I'm just making a follow-up, the issue of red. You know, Chair, I understand the reason why the red is supposed to be established and so on, but I'm just asking myself whether maybe I'll get a broad statement around that in terms of it's because of the failure of municipality to deal with distribution of electricity. But I just want to satisfy myself and how that's going to sharply differ with the current distribution and assist the people who are clients or receiving the electricity. How it's going to change anyway? How it's going to change, we should go to red and so on. But I understand the reason why it's been established, because you see, when Mr. Leslie James was talking about the tax and say, you know, maybe at the beginning they should be maintained, I'm sure, with ESCOM until, you know, the rest are up and running. I was saying, oh, poor the household, there will be a trial case. If something goes wrong, only the household must pay the price, but the business people will not be stable, not untouched, no? So on and so on. So I'm just raising that question to get it carried around.
Okay.
I think it's Easy has been renamed, actually. Easy was the East Coast Cable. That was the NEPAD project. That is, let me say, the NEPAD project. That has the all of the operators on the continent and some of the countries on the continent. And DOC has basically been running that process. Then there's SAT 3, which is on the west coast. So Easy is on the east coast and SAT 3 is on the west coast, which is the 120 gigabits undersea cable, which is fundamentally managed by Telcom, but owned as a consortium, a closed cartel, basically. What we're proposing is a third cable that would be on the west coast, that would be much bigger than any of the cables that are proposed, either SAT3 or on the or Easy as a cable. The one key driver for Easy is that if we win the SKA tender, is that we actually have to be able to, by 2013, have at least 1 terabit, which is 1,000 gigabits, of capacity out of South Africa available. We have to have a demonstrator available by next year, in 2009, which would have to be 100 gigs. already set 320 gigs. Now, we don't have access to the information. In fact, no one has access to the information in terms of actual how much of set 3 is currently utilized. And that's despite owning Telkom, and we've tried to get that information. And their lawyers have been very clear that that's commercially sensitive information, it is not available to us. And that we'll deal with this question, I think, of what information we can make available and what we can't. I mean, the corporate plans are not at this stage made available to Parliament because they're confidential to a company, but we can sort that out. On the REV, as I understand, the policy objective was, in South Africa at present, you have thousands of tariffs. You don't just have one or two tariffs. So the objective of setting up the REV was to streamline the tariffs, the tariffing of electricity, so that there'd be some sensibility around what households were paying, what commercial enterprises were paying, and what large energy-intensive users were paying across the country, and not be different by municipality. The other thing was to move towards a system where you would have a greater degree of contestability, so that, in a sense, if you live in Kurulen, and this is not now, is that as the model evolves over time, if you look at the white paper on electricity, you could then choose when it was a totally competitive market on whether your electricity supplier would be the rate that Ekurhuleni covers, or you could get your electricity the rate that's covered by Johannesburg because they're more efficient, they get better pricing and the rest and the like. So the attempt was to introduce some competition into the system so that you'd have a greater degree of efficiency. And then lastly, I suppose, was to move away from the current. You'd know that electricity tariff or the charges of electricity go towards paying for a wider range of municipal services than just electricity. So I think the attempt of the restructuring is to ensure that the money from electricity is used to invest and upgrade the infrastructure in the electricity first. And it was the dividends over and above that investment that's required that would then go, in the case of the REIT model, to all of the shareholders of the REIT going forward.
Yeah.
I think the cable which the under one is the one which linked to the Telkom one. I understand, even ourselves in communication, Telkom can't budge with certain information for commercial reasons.
Sorry?
No, I was saying getting information on the extent of the utilization of the current system in Telkom. We haven't been able to, it's not available. It's information that's just not available.
I'm looking for the private sector one because I know it's private commercial reasons, it's understandable. I'm talking about the study was done by public funding. And when the DG mentioned that, you know, it hasn't been officially released and things like this, my view was that it's not Parliament's fault where the department was delayed in terms of, or the minister was delayed in terms of releasing information or making it official, because I was told by the minister last year, already in July, that, you know, the minister is going to make it official. So it's almost a year later now. It's not our fault that the thing was delayed. But I'm not trying to blame the fault. I'm just trying to say that even though the thing was delayed, I think Parliament should have the right to ask for this information. So we shouldn't be told that, you know, the information is not available yet because the thing was not official. That was my point.
Lisa, do you want to respond to this particular?
No, I wanted to just, in addition to the point that the teacher made about the commercial sensitivity of the information, but also some of the work which is core to the study isn't complete. So I'm not too sure if we'll be able to come and present an incomplete study to the portfolio committee, because we can't answer some of the questions. And I think in the next 2 weeks or so, we should be able to complete some of the issues. Because there are two issues that are relevant to the current set three. The first issue is the issue that the DG has raised around capacity utilization. I mean, there isn't much capacity in set three at the moment for the requirements that we have, both for the SKA project and other research projects in the country that are strategic to the development of the country in the long term. But secondly, you also have the specific requirements of 2010, for example, that we cannot accommodate within set three. And generally, the economy, I'm not talking about specific projects now, but we want to secure, at least from the position of the state, we want to secure that particular projects that have an international, you know, connotation to have a dedicated under table and so on, and it has implications for the country and its credibility going forward. But the other more fundamental question relates to prices that are attached to said trade because of the nature of the consortium. You do find collusive pricing to an extent that there's not much that you can do with pricing within the trade. Now you want to ensure that the new cable, you know, does deal with some of those issues. It does not only deal with the issue of capacity, but it does actually reduce the prices of broadband within the country, and so on. The other issue that still requires to be resolved in the finalization of the study is the issue of where you plug the cable. Do you plug it in London or do you plug it in Latin America? And I'm therefore saying that we still need to really and look at the cost of going to London and then the benefits of going to London. And for am I doing? Oh, okay. Okay. So, I'm therefore saying that there are some of those issues. So, it's not a matter of us just being arrogant about providing information on the study. I just wanted to add on the question that I think James responded to on the reserve machine around what are some of the areas that we were looking at in terms of the framework or the policy framework that has Honorable Kondo raised the issue. I think that. Just some brief background onto the issue, not a fast one, in the sense, the elements that we proposed. We are responding to two problems. The one problem is that ESCOM was planning, you know, capacity growth in the country as though we were in 1981, essentially, which is nasty, and that's what we discovered on the issue of the reserve margin, because we ended up asking them the question, how do you understand? You can't maintain a situation where if the economy grows at 2%, then electricity growth will be 1%. We said there's something wrong there. That's why you have some of the capacity programs in the country. Because they were carrying on as though that's viable. If the country grows at 6%, then electricity must grow at 3%. But the danger of doing that is it constrains economic growth and employment in the country in the medium to long term. Because other industries cannot grow because they cannot be guaranteed electricity supply, because they are maintaining it along those lines. The irony of that is that in the 1985 period, electricity was growing at 15% in the country, whereas economic growth was just between 1% and 2%. So there was oversupply in those conditions for a number of other reasons that were tied to the government of the day at the time. Now, the irony would be that why constrain economic growth now with lower, you know, electricity growth? Then that's what we started the discussion with ESCOM. Now, on the other hand, ESCOM would actually argue that the state isn't giving sufficient indicators of how they want to project growth going over time. And therefore, we then said, let's anticipate this problem as it is going to come along. And then we therefore said, within that framework, we have to look at which of the sectors are going to be capital intensive. And our analysis was a very simple one. Mining has lost a number of jobs, but it is becoming more capital intensive. And what are the implications of that? The implication is that they're going to need a lot of the electricity. And mining still grows at the first recession. Secondly, construction is going at a higher pace, and that was electricity intensive, not electricity. So the way ESCOM was looking at the issue of the reserve margin and the relationship between output growth and electricity growth, they were looking at it from a consumer who's sitting in a house. Where they say if your income grows two times, then you're likely to be spending 1% more in electricity. That's how they were maintaining the relationship. But it was like, this is too narrow. It is too narrow. You have to take into account those sectors that have an aggregate impact on the economy, but that are electricity intensive or capital intensive. So I'm just giving this background in order for members of the portfolio committee to understand some of the elements that we were saying must be factored into a discussion about the reserve margin and the security of supply issue, you know, in essence. And that document, which unfortunately somebody leaked somewhere, did cover some of those areas that we're talking to. So we essentially think that go beyond the narrow approach to the issue of the reserve margin. At that time, I think the DG can correct me. At the time when we were having discussions with ESCOM, the reserve margin was about between 8% and 9%. And then we said, there is no way that you can justify having this reserve margin at a time when the country was running into electricity problems. I think it was last year. We then said there must be a problem somewhere. Can we dig deeper into it? It cannot only be the issue of distribution infrastructure at municipal level. it cannot be limited to own decision around that. That is a fact. We understand that. And also capacity, you know, skills capacity within municipalities. That might be a fact. But what is the aggregate problem that we have in the country for medium to long-term growth in the country? And our sense was that we needed to move this ESCOM from, and I think the EU kind of reserve margin is between 20% and 25%. They can afford that. But as a country, as a developing country, we can't afford that. Similarly, we cannot afford another extreme where you have the lowest reserve margin in a developing country context. You can't have that. And we couldn't, so we gravitated towards 15% precisely because we were saying we would want to have a higher reserve margin, which doesn't come to the first world, 20 and 25%. Because once we get to that point, then you start to have inflationary problem because you have a higher reserve margin, which you can't sustain, you know, going forward in terms of utilization, which will force you to increase prices. And therefore, I mean, electricity prices, at least for households, are affected into the CPI. I'm just indicating some of the things that we're putting in the topic.
Okay, thank you.
We must move on. Eric and Desmond? No. Okay. Can I just say one or two things? You see, in our reports and annual reports last year, we were not particularly positive about ELEXCO. I'm not going to go through them, right? Now, firstly, we should welcome the agreement. Who's writing the report? Eric, yes, Marie. We should welcome the agreement that has been secured about 10 days ago, especially as we're looking very wonky before that, and you'll remember that ELEXCO community came to see us and so on. So I think we should congratulate them, but cautiously, because last year they were very euphoric and, you know, nobody's to blame. It's understandable, but just a cautious welcoming of what's happening. I also noticed the two researchers, neither of them notes, for example, that the DG said that she will look into whether that report on Infoco can be released or not. So who's going to remember that? I'm 51 now. And I'll tell you, it's true, for sure, you'll soon know this too. I'm beginning to forget, really. And so on. So now, you know, I mean, you can't rely on me. I'm getting old now. So please remember that we've got that thing. But there is something I want to throw back to Chris Wong. Can't you go and see Parliament's law advisors? Ask them, where does accountability begin and end in a situation like this? Can I ask members of the study group to think about this, right? You see, what would you do with the information? Ask yourself that, right? Now, if you are calling for a closed briefing, that can be arranged. But how do we know that members will not talk to people who talk to people? I'm not saying a member of the committee will go and inform Infraco's rivals about what's there. The natural thing in politics is to talk at dinner tables. I mean, I'm the worst for that sort, right? And so on and so on. It might end up then with somebody whose brother-in-law happens to be working for some company and so on, you know? So what will you really do with the information? Think about it. Because I think we have to find a balance. This is not water, it's not electricity, it's not the provincial and local government. Here, these are companies that are competing in the market. The only difference is they are owned by the state. And they have socio-economic imperatives. And increasingly the department and us, the gap is narrowing between how you manage commercial financial viability and socio-economic responsibility. And I'm very pleased to say, whether the department or the minister agrees with us or not, as Kumita will confirm, in the economic transformation document, in what's emerging in June and in December, whether the minister agrees or not with us, he must go to ANC and fight his battles. If you look at the current draft, it actually, the balance is much nicer between, maybe the minister drafted himself, I don't know, but the point is, the balance is much more consistent with the sort of things we were saying in 2004. The lesson that I think the department should draw is that we are almost always correct. And it's better not to resist, because 2 years later, they see even further than we have done. So really, I mean, you know, when we say things, just accept it. But I will say this much, Chris, just think about it, that these are operating in the market, and there are some things that, you know, always publicly funded. It doesn't necessarily mean Parliament is automatically entitled to it. I don't think that's the criteria you're using. As a Marxist, I agree with you. But you and I are not in the same ideological. We are far apart, as you know. Right? Even my comrade Kumisa and me, we are far apart. Being Marxists, right? Time and easy. Okay. The point I'm making is that we as a study group will think about it, okay? And we will mandate Chris Wong. And hey, why? What about Bongi Ghosh is a lawyer? Two of you go. Now not today. We give you a mandate to go and look these things up. I'm not convinced by the department in the way they always reply. But I just want Parliament's portfolio committee and the study group in particular to think about this. How far do we go and where do we stop and so on? But often you guys use it as an excuse. Not you. Sorry, it's by the nature of things. You are a DG and a development resource. All the departments that deal with, they very sort of cautious about giving us certain reports. And we have to fight for them. And I'm just saying it's nothing to do with individuals. It's to do with the nature of the relationship in parliaments and executives. Although I will say that I feel our relationship is reasonably cooperative overall. And we've said that's not my view, it's the collective view of this thing, the report adopted by the committee, and I refer you to our two previous reports. We congratulated the DG on a candor. Like, how do you say the word candor? Is that the way you pronounce it? Candor. See, I know how to write the word, I know what it means, I don't know how to pronounce it. Okay. I think on ESCOM, all I want to say is, sorry, anything else in ESCOM? Okay, we've mandated. See, I hope the researchers are writing this thing, that we have mandated Chris Wong and Bongi Kosi Kolwane to, sorry? Okay, Eric Kolwane, to actually, Eric said he doesn't mind being called Bongi Kosi, being called Skumbuso, being called Eric. Now, I don't know why the whip feels that she should speak on his behalf, but okay. What do you want to call this term, Eric? Just call what you want to be called. Bongi Kosi, Skumbuso, or Eric? Okay, you can reply. In short, can we be clear that Mr. Kolwane and Mr. Wong have been mandated to approach Parliament's law advisors and come back to us? It's Wong, it's not Wang. He explained to us. It's spelled W-A-N-G. It's pronounced Wong, isn't that right? It's pronounced W-U-N-G. You see, I speak Shivenda, I speak Chinese. I can't get his Kosa right, see? I know that. Never get it right. Okay, can I just go on to say that on ESCOM, we just want to observe a few quick things, right? Now, I remember this is, we're looking at this year, but we just can't draw a distinction altogether. On ESCOM, we want to point out that they said in 2006, right, you're monitoring them, Mr. Teledi, they said they're going to deliver 796 megawatts. Okay? That's what they reported. Has that happened? Did they deliver 796 megawatts? No. Yeah, but I mean, you're monitoring them, but, you know. They did. Okay, that's fine. Okay, the next quick thing then, why are you so hesitant then? We are concerned about the decline in annual figures, right? Yeah, you can just see. You know, in 626 on page 20, we said the committee is concerned about the decline in annual figures of newly electrified houses. Of the report and annual reports. Now, Mr. Gabashi also conceded to us that they will not be able to reach universal access by 2012. We did send a report to Minister Zereji, and needless to say, they don't even acknowledge our reports. And really, you know, I can't do more than that. But that's our problem as Parliament. Now, in the current budget for 2007-2008, I know it's DME, but have they allocated sufficient money to meet the targets?
Well, there's a much more complex problem than that.
I'm sure.
The decision was to move the funding for electrification program from DME to PLG. So it's...
Who is that? Is that
so it's as we understand, the last time they hadn't provided sufficient to be able to meet 2012, but 2012 still stays as the target for completion.
Yeah, okay. Can we note that I'll also speak to Sydney privately and just find out what's happening, right? But then can we also draw your attention to 629 for the committee's report, but we've got corruption on. We did talk about that issue, and we said that the committee will monitor developments and so on, and we will ask ESCOM to give us a report back. We can't wait till November or September or October to get a report back for 629 on page 24. just note that, Eric, and then you'll, when you read your report again, you'll see what I'm talking about. Okay, thank you very much, James. On the E&E, I think I'll just forego my questions for now. There isn't time. Can we move on to the next one, which is Program 3? I said to people up to 4, we will get the tea and then we'll break at 4. And then so we may take the questions tomorrow. Thank you. Thanks, James. Yeah.
There's no direct response to that, no. I know.
The hospital we managed to transfer to the province. The school is not that expensive, so we hadn't prioritized the school. We're looking to actually get the establishment of Alexandra Bay as a township, project managed by the DBSA. The advantages of the DBSA is, frankly, they're the ones who are responsible for Sia and Zamanj, right? For Sia and Zamanj, they would be able to get us all of these big grants and all of those things, because they actually have direct responsibility for that. So the most urgent one, which was costing us a lot of money, was the hospital. So that's moved to provincial government fortuitously. The others will be moving with that. The for example, the airport, there's a cooperation agreement that we now have with De Beers, basically, where they've upgraded some of the facilities. They've been upgrading them because they plan to use the airport on a much more regular basis. So it's in progress. But there's quite a lot of work that we've had to take consultants for in terms of Ervin, dividing up the Ervin and the rest of the night before you can get to a final stage on that. But it's progressing quite nicely, actually.
Sorry, man. I apologize. I just realized something I've got to ask right now of the committee. It's to do with your program, James. You see, you've got all these selected medium-term output targets in the E&E, page 639. Surely these are unrealistic. For example, you're talking about broadband infraco, measurable indicator, upgraded to a 10 gigawatt, I don't know, dense wavelength, October 2007. I mean, is that really realistic? Will you be able to do that? Really? Okay, then the one that actually is very challenging is under the energy sector. You say restructuring of EDI, target July 2007. What do you mean by that target? From what I gather, the bill is still going to be processed as a parliament, and somebody told me the other day that you're not going to have this EDI process complete for another 2 to 3 years. Is that correct? No, you're laughing. I'm just asking. I don't know. I'm not being difficult or facetious.
Yeah, I think what we were trying to do was to say for us as DPE on EDI, what is our responsibility? And I think that target date was referring to us coming up with our own position.
Oh, I see.
Yes,
right.
Because it's really a DME process where we can't control it.
So why don't you say policy?
Oh, yes.
You got here 6 metro rails operational.
Yeah.
That's your measurable indicator.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
It has to be more S-form readiness in ring fencing and making sure.
Yeah, yeah, so then you got the wrong thing here.
Yeah.
Now, presumably, this is Treasury's fault.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, blah. I was teasing you, and he says, yeah, automatically. You obviously trained them to respond in a particular way. Okay, look, again, the point comes back to the point Peter made, which is the deadlines are a bit mildly sort of set. A bit wonky, but also, man, I mean, you know, your measurable indicator here, your measure indicator is just plain wrong. Okay.
You know, sir, I think I asked last year, when will I be able to make an anti-alcohol phone call from my house? And I think I was told by October last year. I still can't.
I don't remember.
I think they asked at the Austin school last year,
yeah.
As a client, not as an entity, as a customer, as a client, when will I be able to pick up my phone and make a phone call from home without using a cell phone? and I was told last year October.
Supposing that you shifted from Telkom as your service provider to now to this whole business plan is that they're rolling out generally in the metro, in the larger metro space. And frankly, they've also, I mean, they've, no doubt, if they go to the press, they'll say that we haven't been able to roll out the infrastructure on time, but neither have they been able to roll out. I mean, in fact, their business plan says they would start first with business, with large users, before they get to a point where they roll out to individual households.
Okay, can I just alert members to a process we should allow? We should always look at the measurable objectives, that's key. So each person responsible for the particular program, I think we should pose questions in regards to that. But before we move on,
can I just say that next week at the Autumn School, I have told Derek for sure. You see, when you're addressing us on InfraCo, don't start at the level of Eric and Chris. We want to know what is broadband. Start at my level, actually. Oh, yeah, actually, other level. She's not as low than me. Because, yeah, I at least can work email and she. Let's not discuss that now. Right, so she's from Pedi, right? And she says to me, oh, it doesn't mean if I'm from Pedi and you're from Maritzburg, therefore. But the truth is, as far as this goes, I think I'm a few notches ahead of her, which I've developed very fast. Now, I won't talk about the other guys from the Eastern Cape just now. But on a very, very explicit and direct thing. We are not going to listen to people speaking at those two guys there. Okay? So what is broadband? You know, like my 9-year-old Mika, I told Derek, his father, and it's true, has less of an understanding than his 9-year-old son's got. So you start at level. Okay? And I'm serious, we don't want to be all the time for this stuff, eh? What do you say, Bonani?
Okay. And after all, you were about 35 years old the first time you saw a computer.
Yeah, I only learned you the computer. I don't leave where we stop next week, right, Sandra?
Thank you, Chair. By now, I think it's established that legal governance risk and the secretariat is essentially a support function. So our workload and our tasks are actually derivatives of the work that's generated by the energy mining, broadband, defense, and forestry teams. Just in broad terms, don't want to bore you with the purpose of each one of the sub-programs.
Yeah, they haven't changed much. And they're obvious by this. Can we move on? Okay. Thank you very much. You're very kind. I'm not being rude, am I? What I meant is, you know, okay, first, okay, on, please.
See, he would be, they say, you're rude and abrasive, and they'd rush about you in the main guardian.
Somebody's being so defensive.
Chair, perhaps just for you to note that DJ has already mentioned the secretariat will move to the chief operating officer.
Have you got new classes, Sandra?
Yes. I lost my other I see we've more or less color coordinated.
Yeah. That upsets me enormously, by the way. Upsets me enormously, like a woman going to a party after she's got it. I'm afraid to say, it's not gender insensitive. Oh, there are men who do that too. By the way, who buy an expensive suit, and then they go to a party and there's somebody else wearing the same suit. Okay, so now it's gender neutral before you. So I'll be changing my glasses tomorrow, but carry on.
Going on to the legal report, a lot of the key projects and the measurable indicators reflected on this slide have already been reported on in some way or another by, for instance, Jans, and so will Lisa be doing later on. I will limit myself just to indicate to you what we have achieved in up to now and what remains to be achieved in relation to those key projects. On the transfer of South African Airways, as you know, the bill has been passed. We are awaiting presidential signature. There are some guarantees that we still need to be transferred from Transnet to DPE, and then that transaction would be closed. We have to reflect it as a 207-208 final deliverable, because those actions are still outstanding, although the major part of the transaction was executed last year. You will note also, Chair, that overall, legal governance, risk and the secretariat had a high transactional year this past year, with some slow progress on other issues. On InfraCo, we've basically prepared the legislation, the enabling legislation. We've executed some of the transaction agreements. There are one or two agreements still to be executed, which include some of the agreements with Nayotel. These agreements basically provide the platform for the capital expenditure thus far. We have commenced with a transaction for the transfer of South African Express Airways. DG has indicated that we've secured cabinet approval. We've prepared the legislation. The chair has indicated that the parliamentary process is due to, or the public hearings will be conducted on the 6th of June. We are planning, chair, to conclude the transaction towards October. And in all of these transactions, the enactment of the legislation would be a condition precedent to closing the transaction. So, if at all possible, October would be an ideal time for both South African Express Airways and InfraCo. The book can be processed by that date. It's not a transaction, if it's not achieved, then it's postponed to closing. As far as PBMR restructuring is concerned, the legal office provided some input into PBMR's positioning in the nuclear sector, but we've also prepared a terms of reference to appoint a service provider to give us definitive advice on a new shareholders agreement. The DG mentioned earlier that a new cooperation agreement is due to be negotiated soon. And the principles of the shareholders' agreement should be known by the time of discussion and negotiation with potential investors. KLF is the Komati Land Forest Pty Limited. Lisa will explain later what the restructuring of Sasol entails, but from a legal office perspective, we will exercise oversight over that transaction. We're also participating in the definition of the disposal strategy from a legal processing point of view. If LOMA is the Mozambican subsidiary of SATCO, and there we expect to play a more intimate role in collaboration with the DBSA in assisting the Mozambican government in buying back the shares from SAFCO in Ivloma, and to actually work out a forward-looking strategy in terms of future concessioning type of transactions that they may undertake. It's already been reported that we secured a signature of a deed of settlement. If I may, just for the interest of the committee, distinguish the signature that we were boasting about in October last year. That was the signing of an MOU, which was actually a non-binding document. We've now secured the signature of a deed of settlement. But there is still a hurdle ahead insofar as we have to convert that into an order of court. We are also assisting the community by preparing, and our communications office is very supportive in this regard as well, in preparing a layman's version of the agreement in publication format, both in Afrikaans and in Nama, that we hope will support them in their deliberations. Those are the transactions that we anticipate for this year. Chair, what I would like to highlight in relation to this slide is you will note that in most of these transactions, they run over more than 1 year.
Yeah.
And there are different deliverables towards the measurable indicator. This is what we believe is or anticipate would happen, barring externalities, but at this point in time, this is our schedule. You will also note in items 8 and 9, we reflect the work of the in-house counsel and the litigation office. Before moving on to governance, if I may just highlight you with reference to last year's undertakings on our part, what we have achieved and haven't achieved, we undertook to reduce the litigation, outstanding litigation by between 20 and 50%. just as we were moving towards an achievement of 50% of new litigation, we did caution when we set this target that this is a high-risk variable target. The recent papers we received on Ntunzi certainly warps this percentage dramatically. We have established a legal panel. This is an item 66 of the committee's report. We do provide regular reports on the impact of draft legislation, as an example recently on the EDI restructuring bill. We have provided input to the procurement office on the BPE procurement guidelines. In particular, we've been working on a standard contract with service providers. We have, as far as the SOE legislation is concerned, we've developed a conceptual framework, we're busy with the drafting guidelines on that, but the draft bill is not yet available. Chair, if I may just, if there are no questions on the legal side, then I'll move on to governance.
Please, can I just say that the tea arrived 15 minutes before it should. It's going to get cold. I think we can spill a little bit about 4:15. So at the end of the world, why don't we just break for 5 minutes? People get their tea and come back in. Tea. Okay. No more than 5 minutes. Thank you.
And then I think we should distribute them here.
All of them.
All of them. All of them. Have you got enough for the department?
Yes, I think so.
Hello?
I withdraw.
Then, what answers to this? Oh, we never realized that we need to do this. That is why it's not an issue. Not because the other parties are coming to the party. It's like, oh, the question of people see how to get. And the case comes with the Russian. That is like, you know that some of your parties are trying. So, in your plan, you must allow for that tardiness. In a sense, when you come, then you come and you say, yeah, I can just see what's going to happen.
Isn't that amazing? We've got to say, well, we've got to say that he's coming this year.
The review of the founding documentation and shareholder agreement, we have defined a terms of reference for the assessment of those by a service provider. So our objective is also to have those approved this year. As a matter of interest, as far as the founding documentation is concerned, and actually also in relation to the SOE legislation, the new companies bill provided some significant input to us, impetus especially as far as the SOE legislation is concerned. And at the autumn school, I hope to share with you the salient features of the new companies bill as an input to the shareholder management model. As far as the relevance to the founding documentation is that when we initially presented this project, we had anticipated that we would do both a model memorandum and articles of association. The new companies bill collapses this into a single founding document. So their model is still outstanding. So we will go through a process of collaboration with DTI to finalize those guidelines. The third key project on the governance side, namely the strengthening of the SOE boards, we've had mixed success in terms of progress. The most significant progress actually being on the remuneration guidelines, which had, as I said, as DG indicated, been approved by Minister. We're just waiting for the support from the chairpersons, and then we'll take it to Cabinet. We have done a board profiling of all the SOE boards, identified gaps in terms of skills, and as and when vacancies arise, we have been filling those vacancies, especially with...
Do you have a list of where the kind of people you've got on the board at the moment?
Yes, we have a list of the board members,
and
of course.
On
the boards that they serve. Yes, I think the DG chair has already indicated that we have a list. What we are going through is we are actually verifying which of those directorships relate to holding company structures, dormant or shelf companies, etc. So we're going through a validation process at this point in time.
Yes, he was also on the board actually. What is
We have two board databases. The one is the existing appointees, and then we have what we call a shadow board database, which is basically potential candidates for board appointments, so that if a vacancy exists, we can proceed with
it. Can I just maybe just before I forget, when we ask about, you say we do the verification of the board membership. Now, we don't need taking it to the board, whether at the end of the day, I would like to know that Mr. S
is serving on 10 different boards or subcommittees or whatever. You know, that's each one of them has one meeting, it's 50 meetings he's got to go to. So, whether it's an NGO, whether it's a private sector board, he's on his E, he has got another commitment.
When
you do that, that's
the best. Mr. Hendricks has indicated, it's got to be a factual awkward slip of the tongue there. It has to be a factual representation. Just for the interest of the committee, at the time that the directors take up their positions, they have to disclose in terms of the Companies Act towards the company secretary what other directorships than hold. But of course, a directorship is a fluid issue because it changes during the course of the year. And what we have found through our SIPRA search, and we don't have a guarantee that the SIPRA records are up to date, and what we received in terms of the disclosure registers was some discrepancies, and we're going through the process of cleaning that up. Chair, then, as far as the legal and governance database workflow is concerned, we have actually started this project as an internal project in the department. Reason being, we believe it's important that the staff themselves, as part of their training, actually appropriate or understand the tasks that they have to execute themselves. We will be getting in a service provider to actually consolidate the work on the legal and governance workflow. But quite a lot of work has already been done in-house within the department to unpack not only the business process flow, but the essential outputs of that for both legal and governance. And it includes, by the way, the legislative processing side as well. As far as the board induction and training is concerned, the only progress that we've made thus far is the terms of reference. We had to postpone the appointment of the service provider for the new financial year. Our budget was exhausted. And the same applies to the board performance appraisals. Chair, mixed success as far as the strengthening of the SOE boards are concerned. What is important to note is that all of the guidelines that we will be developing under that item 3 will be transformed into either regulations or practice notes, depending on whether they would be mandatory or guidelines, and actually form part of the shareholder management model. The workflow, the legal and governance workflow, we hope to publish as a codified business process for any governance unit in a state or oversight unit in the state and a department that has oversight responsibilities. The final item under governance is a governance audit template. We have been exercising our governance oversight with reference to essentially the corporate plan, the quarterly reports, and the annual reports of SOEs. We want to give further definition to the content of those to ensure that we have a more frequent update on any governance failures within SOEs. So we will be developing the governance audit template for that purpose. It's worthwhile, Chair, just with reference again to last year's budget hearing, just to highlight to you on page 11. Let me give you the paragraph reference, paragraph 5.5. You will note that this was still reflected as objectives under the old ARM branch, that we developed standardized formats for annual reports, corporate plans, and quarterly reports. These are also components of the shareholder management model. Then, as far as the Secretariat is concerned, Chair, that unit actually runs as business as usual. It's a predetermined format and structure of meetings, and we basically complied with the year's program, and we will be complying with the coming year's program. As far as risk management is concerned, key projects there would be to review the SOE risk management practices. We're in the process of procuring a risk management software to assist us in terms of tracking the salient or the trends in risk across SOEs, and that would also put us in the position to report back to you on the basis of an SOE risk reporting dashboard. All of that are targets for this year to be achieved. As far as last year's objectives are concerned, Chair, they listed again in the follow-through of paragraph item paragraph 5.5, and I can just in general mention to you that all of those bulleted items were achieved during the last financial year.
Very good.
Moving on to the budget, if I were to summarize what LGRS achieved over the last budget year, it was high on transactions, high on conceptual framework for a shareholder management model, and high on capacity building. It's worth noting that we've increased the size of the branch with 8 new candidates. We've appointed four new lawyers, which includes a disability candidate. Our legal office is much stronger. We have very capable and interesting people in our legal office now, two very strong chief directors in governance as well. Thus, we'll note that the compensation of employees' budget has increased slightly. On goods and services, the significant increase is largely towards service provider costs to complete the shareholder management model. You will note that there is no transfer item. The transfer item that we had last year, as you will note, relates to the Regional Services Council levies. And then as far as our capital expenditure is concerned, most of our equipment expenditure has been absorbed during the last financial year. So it's a limited capital expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We're not going to take questions now. We're going to conclude on the understanding that we're going to take questions after Ms. Evans speaks tomorrow. We start at 9:30 in the same venue. Also to say that the members who are here are going to be to the DG to restructure the program for the next day. So you should stay behind, but if people can leave as swiftly as you can so that we can finish our proceedings. Also to say, members have been given and the department the program for the second, third and fourth quarter. It says they're pending approval, but in fact the approval was granted last week. So this is in fact the program pending reliever's confirmation that the department, the board chairperson and whoever else on the board and the SOE CEOs have agreed to the days of the annual reports, but this is the program. And we made one or two changes today, yeah. Okay, thank you, Bonani. Thank you very much to the department in particular. See you tomorrow. Eric and Jason Morin, if you can stay behind. For the rest, apart from the DG,
see you tomorrow.